may not be suitable for younger listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Disconnected Podcast, disconnecting you from reality. Today, we'll be starting our new series called The House Chronicles, beginning with the Lizzie Borden case. Tune in for next week, because in our possession, we have the Warren Archives. We will be diving deep into the true story behind The Conjuring.
Oh, are we starting?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I was waiting for you to finish, and I think I blacked out.
You did.
I did. Oh, hello. How are you doing today?
I am doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Ooh. Yeah.
So today, we're going to be starting the House Chronicles.
We are. I'm so excited for this, because I don't know what you're... I know what you're talking about. I know you're talking about The Conjuring, but I don't know what you will be like specifically talking about. I know a little bit about the story, but who knows?
So tune in for next week.
Yes, very excited about that one. Today we'll be diving into Lizzie Borden.
All right.
Lizzie Borden House.
Yes. I know some disturbing facts about it, but I'm just going to let you share it all.
Thank you. Why are you so intense today?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe the background music is just, I don't know.
Yeah, we have background music right now, and it's intense. Okay, so what do you know about the Lizzie Borden house or the case or whatever?
Okay, well, I know that she killed her parents.
Theory.
Yes.
Never been proven.
She was never prosecuted because there wasn't, I'm guessing, enough evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened around the 1800s, 18-something?
1890s.
1890s, okay, so yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, so yeah, she was never proven guilty. Nobody knows. I have my theory. I will share it at the end of the episode, so stick around.
Of course.
So, Lizzie Andrew Borden, was born July 19th, 1860 in Fall River, Massachusetts. So everything happened in this place, in Fall River, Massachusetts. She was born to Sarah Anthony Borden and Andrew Jackson Borden. And Andrew Jackson was a rich man. He started off not being very rich, and then he started like having properties and textile mills and all of these things. He was even the president of Union Savings Bank. So he was like a pretty important guy in Massachusetts.
He's a big fish.
He's a big fish. Real big fat fish.
Okay.
Okay. And at his death, he was valued in that time to be worth $300,000, which is equivalent to $9 million as of 2020.
Wow.
So, that was a, yes, big fish.
Very big fish.
And so, but Andrew was known for not really liking to spend his money. He didn't have plumbing in his house, which was a very common thing for rich people to have in that time, because only rich people could afford plumbing in the 19th century. But he didn't have any, so they had to, like, you know, go in a bucket and then take the bucket outside and put it somewhere.
Yeah, and they would wipe with their $100 bills.
I don't know if those existed. They probably did.
They probably did.
No, but he wouldn't do that. He didn't like spending money. He didn't like going over the top with his money. But then 3 years after the death of Lizzie Borden's mother, Andrew married Abby Durfee? I don't know her name.
Yeah.
Durfee Gray. And Lizzie stated that she called her stepmother Mrs. Borden. But she said it as an insult. She didn't like her.
Sarcastically.
She thought that Abby had only married her father for money.
Okay.
And it was like well known around town that they didn't get along, that Lizzie and her sister Emma, because she had a sister Emma, they just didn't like her. They thought she only wanted her father's money. It was like the usual stepmom daughter.
Gold digger.
Yeah, daughter relationship where they think she's a gold digger.
Right.
She only wants my dad for his money. I don't like her. I hate her. And she hated her even more because Andrew was known for giving properties as gifts to Abby's relatives. So he just be like, hey, here's a house because you're my wife's cousin or something. You're my wife's sister and all of these things. And so Lizzie and Emma were not really happy about that. And I don't think I would be happy about that either. If my dad married a random woman and he was super rich, and then all of a sudden he was known for being a cheap guy, and all of a sudden he starts gifting things to these people, it's gonna be like, why were you not ever like that with us, but now with this new woman you're all of a sudden like a super nice guy? And so the night before the murders, so this is all happening, this all happened, and then the night of the murder, so the night before, John Morse, who is the brother of Lizzie and Emma's mom, arrived at the house. He visited to stay a few days there to discuss business with Andrew. And for several days before the murders, it was known that the entire household had been violently ill, and Abby thought that someone was trying to poison them because Andrew was not a very popular guy in town. But who knows? Who knows if they were trying to be poisoned, or maybe they were eating mutton, which is lamb meat. They don't know. Maybe the mutton was just bad, because I don't know if they had proper refrigeration back then. I think they just salt things and hope it doesn't rot. But yeah, this was all happening. This is all before the murder. So this is the history of the family. Daughters and stepmom didn't get along.
A little bit of backstory.
Yes. Uncle came to visit the night before the murders, and it was known that they were all sick before the murders. So I'm going to get into the murders.
Ooh.
Happened August 4th. 1892.
Okay.
So this is a lot. If you have any comments, let me know when I'm reading this. So John Morse arrived the evening of August 3rd, and he slept in the guest room that night. After breakfast the next morning, at which Andrew, Abby, Lizzie Morse, and the Borden's maid, Maggie Sullivan, and she's also a big player in this, and I hadn't mentioned her before because she comes out of nowhere. Okay. And you don't expect her to be like anything significant, because she's just the maid. That's like, people are like, ah, she's just the maid. She doesn't know anything.
Right.
But she's pretty big in this case. So they were all, this article says that they were all there during breakfast.
When was this? This was on
August 4th. This is the morning of August 4th.
Okay. The day of the killing?
That's the day the Abby and Andrew were murdered.
Okay.
So they were all having breakfast together. And then Andrew and John Morse went to the sitting room where they chatted for an hour. Then Morse left around 8:48 a.m. to go buy something for his nephew. He went to go buy a pair of oxen for his niece, because that's just what you do in the 19th century. You buy a bunch of cows for your niece.
Okay.
And he was planning to return to the Borden home during lunch. After that, Andrew left for his morning walk around 9 a.m. Although cleaning the guest room was one of Lizzie and Emma's regular chores, Abby went upstairs sometime between 9 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. to make the bed.
Mm-hmm.
According to forensic investigation, Abby was facing her killer when she was attacked. So she was first struck on the side of the head with a hatchet, which cut right above her ear, so on the right side of her head. She was cut right above the ear, causing her to turn, and she fell face first onto the floor, and then creating contusions on her nose and forehead. So that's how they knew.
She just took a swing to the head.
Yeah, it was brutal. And then her killer struck her multiple times, delivering 17 more direct hits to the back of her head.
With the hatchet. Oh, man.
So during this time, Abby is supposedly upstairs making the bed.
Yeah,
and she was like, in her room in the attic. No one really knows exactly where she is, because there's so many different accounts from so many different people who lived in the house,
mm-hmm.
that no one just knows where she was. She was, later, I'm going to read a little bit of her testimony, but she claims that she was cleaning windows, but then she claims that she was upstairs.
That's a little suspicious.
It's a little suspicious.
Maybe she was an accomplice. Who knows?
That's a theory, but who knows? So when Andrew returned around 10:30 a.m., Abby was already dead at this time. She was upstairs dead in her room.
Okay.
His key failed to open the door, so he knocked for attention. And then Maggie went downstairs. So she had to go from her room, which was up in the attic, past the room where Abby was dead already, down the stairs to go open the door for Andrew.
Okay.
And she didn't see her.
Hmm.
She didn't see the body. And they said that when you go up the stairs, because I've seen videos of this house, when you go up the stairs and you turn your head to the left, you can see under the bed because you're eye level with the floor.
Right. Okay.
And how, I mean, I guess.
How did she miss that?
You can always miss something. Like, you're just going down the stairs, going through your day. And sometimes you don't notice things. And
you don't notice a
dead body.
A dead body and a bloody floor.
And you don't hear the sounds of someone whacking someone in the head with a hatchet 17 times.
17 times.
17 times. This is someone who hated Abby. This is someone who wanted her dead. For sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, 17. Just to make sure and to get out all my rage.
Yeah. And no one heard any of this.
And no one heard any of this.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Very.
And so Andrew came back. The door was jammed. So Sullivan, Maggie, went to go open the door. And she later would testify that she heard Lizzie laughing at the top of the stairs.
Ooh.
Yeah. But she's like, I wasn't sure exactly where she was. I just heard her laughing on the
top
of the stairs.
She was mentally unstable.
Maybe. They say that it was either Lizzie or Maggie that were
laughing.
A little...
Well, you know, a lot of people, many people, they grieve in different ways. They, when they're like in shock, maybe that was part of it, you know? Maybe she was just nervously laughing because she was reacting to what just happened.
Yeah, I just killed someone. Let me laugh a little.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So so this was considered significant because Abby was already dead at this time and her body, like I said, would have been visible.
Clearly.
Yeah, Lizzie later denied that she was upstairs and testified that her father had asked her where Abby was. So now this is Lizzie saying, I opened the door for my dad and Abby wasn't there.
Hmm.
And so she replied that Abby had gone to visit a sick friend. Abby had not gone to visit a sick friend. Abby was dead on the floor.
Yeah.
Abby was not busy with a friend. She was no longer being able to be busy with a friend.
No.
So, okay. Lizzie stated that she removed her dad's boots and helped him put on his slippers and lay down on the sofa for a nap.
Okay.
Which is contradicting because in the crime scene photos, Andrew was wearing his boots.
Mm.
And she said that she took them off.
What's happening here?
Exactly. This is why this case is so...
So every sister, every family member has a different story of what happened.
Yeah, but the thing is, only Lizzie and Maggie were claimed to have been in the house, near the house, around the house during this time.
And Abby was dead.
And Abby was already dead at this time. Lizzie said that she helped her dad get put on the couch for a nap. She took off his boots. His boots were on.
Oh, yeah. I remember the picture of his dad. He was already murdered and he had his boots on.
He had his boots on.
Maybe she...
Put him back on?
Put him back on. What? But why?
I don't know.
Ooh.
I don't know. And so she informed Sullivan of the department store sale and permitted her to go, but Sullivan felt unwell and went to take a nap in her room instead. So now it's saying she told Maggie, hey, my dad is taking a nap. I need something from the department store. Can you go get it? And then Sullivan was like, I don't feel well because I just spent the whole day cleaning the windows inside and out. I don't know how you do that. Because this is a big house. This is a two-story house.
It's a two-story house.
And so she's like, I'm going to go to my room, take a nap. And that's when, supposedly, Sullivan found
Abby.
She went upstairs, and that's when she looked to the left and saw her lying on the floor.
Right. Okay.
And so Sullivan testified that...
Abby was not with a friend.
No. But then, this is where it gets weird, because then Sullivan testified that she went up to her room, so now she didn't see her. And so she was cleaning the windows when just before 11:10 a.m. she heard Lizzie call from downstairs. Maggie, come quick. Father's dead. Somebody came in and killed him.
Hmm.
Andrew was just slumped on the couch downstairs, struck 10 to 11 times with a hatchet-like weapon.
The same weapon that killed Abby.
Mm-hmm. Exact same weapon. One of his eyes had been split cleanly in two, suggesting that he had been asleep when attacked.
Oh.
His still bleeding wound suggested a very recent attack. Dr. Bowen, the family's physician, arrived from his home across the street to determine that both victims had died.
Abby and his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad.
Yeah. So, they died around 30 minutes.
Like, there's a difference. Apart.
There's apart. A 30-minute window where Abby is dead and no one has found her, but there's people walking around the house.
Okay.
Andrew gets home. He doesn't go upstairs. He takes a nap in the living room.
Yeah.
And that's when, at 11 a.m., he's killed.
Okay. So, Lizzie told Sullivan...
Yes.
...that someone had broken into the house and killed their dad.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're confused, and the listeners are confused, it's because it is so confusing to follow the story because there's so many contradicting testimonies about it.
Yes.
So here's like the official sort of story. Sullivan, Maggie, is cleaning the windows. Abby is inside. Someone kills her.
Right.
This is like the story. Someone kills her. She's dead on the floor. Sullivan comes back inside. Lizzie is there, I think. But then Lizzie claims that she's not there. But Lizzie is there. Andrew gets home. Sullivan opens the door for Andrew. She hears Lizzie at the top of the stairs laughing. So Lizzie comes down, greets her dad. And she tells Maggie, hey, can you go to the department store? I need this. And she's like, I'm sick. I feel sick because we've been eating raw, rotten food.
I don't know if you noticed, but we've been eating raw food, so I don't feel good.
Yeah, raw food, whatever. She's like, all right, go to your room. Go take a nap. So she goes up all the way up to the attic. She never sees Abby. And then Lizzie calls 30 minutes later, calls Maggie back downstairs saying, hey, someone came into the house and killed my dad.
Okay.
So during this whole time, Lizzie is in the house, Abby's in the house, and Maggie are in the house.
Hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And Andrew's in the house as well, and then both Abby and Andrew are dead.
Yes. And Lizzie claims that someone had broken into the house and killed Dad as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's... I don't know, man.
Yeah, exactly. So now that we get into the investigation, because this is... It's such a mess... I don't know what is happening anymore. So initially, Lizzie, this is the investigators asking her. Initially, she reported that she heard a groan or scraping noise or something inside the house. And 2 hours later, she told police that she had actually heard nothing and entered the house not realizing anything was wrong. So at first, she said, I heard something upstairs.
I'm sorry, who is this?
Lizzie.
Okay.
Lizzie, I heard something upstairs, but I didn't check it out.
Yeah, because it seemed normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then 2 hours later, she tells police, you know what? I didn't hear anything. Anything.
So she's just contradicting herself.
Yeah, she's just contradicting herself. When asked where her stepmother was, she recounted receiving a note asking to visit a sick friend. She also stated that she thought Abby returned and asked if someone could go upstairs to look for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she said she was gone, but then she came back.
Yeah.
But Abby was dead. Way before this.
Okay.
Right? And some police said that she was too calm when asking these questions.
Yeah, usually when someone kills your family member, both two people from your family, you're not that calm.
Yeah, no.
I would be like...
She was too calm, too proper.
I'd be losing it, man. Like, yeah. You know?
I'd be like, oh my god, they're gonna know. They're gonna find out. I killed someone.
Yeah.
I'd be freaking out.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't think I would kill anyone.
Yeah. No.
No. But yeah, she was like super calm. She was like super chill about the whole thing. She's like, yeah, I thought I heard something. You know what? Never mind. I didn't hear anything.
No, she's freaking crazy.
Yeah, so police did a search of her room, but it was only a cursory inspection. And at the trial, so this is police admitting that they did not investigate the house well enough. They're like, yeah, we looked at the house, but we didn't do a pretty good job at it.
You had one job.
They had one job. Look at the house. Look at this crime scene and investigate and find out who the killer is. And they're like, yeah, we didn't really pay much attention to anything. We saw two dead bodies and we're like, that sucks, man. Sucks for you. That sounds like a you problem.
So they just said, oh, you know what? We didn't investigate it well, so
Yeah.
Too bad.
Exactly.
Man.
Yeah. So they were trying to also do a search of Borden, Lizzie Borden's room. But she's like, I'm not feeling well. Can you please leave? And they're like, okay.
Yeah, okay. There's blood all over my room, so can you just...
Yeah, she was probably hiding something in there.
The hatchet.
And bloody clothes.
And...
Because when you're whacking someone like that, blood's going to go everywhere.
Yeah, it's going to splatter.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so she's like, I don't feel so well. Can you please, like, leave? And the police are like, okay, yeah, we'll come back later.
And they never did.
Yeah, they didn't. So when they were doing the search of the house, police found two hatchets, two axes, and a hatchet head with a broken handle in the basement.
Imagine the force that she hit them to break the handle of the hatchet. This must be like a wooden, or like the handle, like a very...
It's a strong wooden handle. Yes. And a metal hatchet head. To break the handle, you gotta be like real swinging with your whole body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So police found this. And they suspected that the hatchet head with the broken handle was used in the murders, but they didn't take it. They didn't take anything from the house as evidence. They left everything there.
Why?
Yeah, they found it with it appeared to have like rust on it, but it seemed intentional, like intentionally dirtied.
Cover the tracks. Okay. Like the blood or maybe dry blood.
Yeah, there. But they didn't take it. They left it there.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like the worst detectives ever.
I mean, this is 1892.
Yeah.
Please. I mean, even now.
Yeah, even now, but I mean.
Yeah. So,
it just doesn't make sense.
It just doesn't make sense.
Very, very. Yeah. Smells fishy.
So, police were stationed around the house during this whole investigation. And on August 4th, so 2 days after the murder, an officer saw Borden enter the cellar with her friend. And with a kerosene lamp and a slop pail.
Oh.
So they were going to probably...
They were going to burn something?
Burn something. They had something in the slop pail.
What's that?
It's where they put the trash and their when they go do their business.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, because they had no plumbing.
Mm-hmm. And although he was unable to see what she was doing, he stated that she was bent over the sink.
She
was cleaning something. She was probably cleaning the things that she used to kill her parents. And the police were like, that looks normal. That's just a lady doing her chores.
Yeah, like a lady has to do chores, so she's not doing anything suspicious.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
No. Okay.
And on August 5th, Morse tried to leave the house, John Morse, the uncle. But he was mobbed by hundreds of people, and police had to escort him back into his house. So people, this was a crazy thing. This was a they compare the popularity of this case to like something like O.J. Simpson.
Mm.
So it's big.
It's a huge case. Back then, it was a very big deal.
Mm-hmm. The next morning, her friend, last name Russell, entered the kitchen and found Borden tearing up a dress.
Lizzie
Borden, yes, tearing up a dress. And she said she was planning to put it in the stove to burn it because it was covered in paint.
Red paint?
I don't know. Or, you know, when blood isn't red anymore, it coagulates, it turns like brown. Like
brownish.
Yeah. So she's like, it's covered in paint. I don't want this dress anymore. I'm shoving it in the stove and burning it.
It looks like blood, but it's just red paint.
Yep. And it was never determined whether this dress was used on the day of the murders.
Then why would she do that? Why would she...
I don't know.
Why would she burn her dress if it's just paint? Just throw it away. But no, she was hiding something.
Yeah. You're like asking me these questions. Even though I have all the information, I have no idea.
I know you don't have all the answers, but I'm just asking them, like, why? Like, it's just, man, well, why? She's a murderer. Yes. Crazy.
Crazy axe murderer.
Yes. Maybe she was possessed.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
I know.
But yes. And so at the inquest, I had to look this up. I'm like, what the heck's an inquest?
Mm-hmm.
An inquest is an investigation into the facts of your relative who has died.
Okay.
So they did an inquest to Lizzie Borden on August 8th. They said her behavior was erratic. And she often refused to answer questions, even if she knew the answers.
What else do you need? She is... acting suspicious.
Yep.
She is giving you all the signs that she has done something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
and you, no one does anything about it.
Mm-mm.
No investigation.
Nope. Yep, that you're right. You're right. I'm not gonna deny what you're saying. You're absolutely right. She often contradicted herself and provided altering accounts. So we have already been over this.
Yeah. So she changes the story.
Yeah. So she said that she was in the kitchen reading a magazine when her father arrived home, and then she says she was in the dining room doing some ironing, and then saying she was coming down the stairs when her father was coming home. So she was either in the kitchen, she was either in the living room, or she was either upstairs when her father came home.
Oh.
And she's like, oh yeah, I was doing this. Oh, but you know what? I was actually doing this. But you know what? Never mind. Now that I think about it, I was actually doing this.
Get your facts straight, man.
Yeah. Yep. That was her. Like I said before, she said that she removed her father's boots, but his boots were on. But you didn't.
I did, but then I didn't.
But then, yeah. So the trial, now we're moving on to the trial. It started June 5th, 1893. This is almost a year later.
Mm-hmm.
I know that trials move slow. I know that investigations move slow. But this is a year after the fact. But when police didn't do enough investigation.
There what investigation?
Yeah,
there
exactly.
There was no investigation whatsoever.
No. It's just people being like, man, this looks suspicious. I'm going to leave it right here.
Yeah.
I'm going to wait for the killer to come and clean all of this up.
Yeah.
Exactly. What is going on? So the trial starts June 5th, 1893. A few days before the trial, on June 1st, a similar murder happened in Fall River, actually. The killings were very similar, and people were like, oh my god, that's the killer. But it was proven that José Correa de Melo, this is a Portuguese immigrant, was convicted of the murder, and he was not anywhere near Fall River a year before.
Where did this come from?
Yeah, people were like, oh my god, a similar murder happened in this town too. That must be the killer.
So they found the killer.
No, they found the killer of that murder, but he was not in Fall River a year before that.
Okay.
Yeah. So they thought that he was the killer, but then it turns out,
No, he
wasn't. It's impossible. He wasn't here. he wasn't in Massachusetts.
He wasn't near Massachusetts during the killings.
Nope. And now this is police contradicting each other about evidence found at the home. So they were saying, you know what? I found the hatchet head in the cellar. Oh, I found it in the room. Oh, I found this here. I found this there. Now police is contradicting themselves.
Okay.
Like between police officers fighting. Like saying, no, I'm right. I'm the one who's cracking this case. I'm right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is during the trial. Police are now contradicting.
Contradicting themselves, yes. Like Lizzie.
Yes, exactly. And Russell, who gave the account of Lizzie burning the dress, but it was never touched after that. Like that piece of evidence, no one ever addressed it afterwards. There was no argument against it.
Yeah, because that wasn't important, right?
Yeah.
Why did you burn the dress, Lizzie?
Yeah, and then they're like, okay, I guess that's a thing that happened. Let's move on now.
Yeah, it looks totally normal when someone just burns their dress because it was full of paint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Yeah, Lizzie. Yeah, that makes sense.
It makes total sense. Hmm. Exactly. Yeah, there was no defense ever attempted against that statement. It was a thing that happened, and it was proven that it did happen. But no one ever said.
Let's turn the page.
Anyway, so different accounts of Lizzie's location were given during the trial. And two people confirmed that she was not in the house. That she was in the family's barn when all of this happened. Two people confirmed this. Two people came forth and said, like, oh yeah, I didn't see her in the house when any of the murders happened. She was in the barn.
But yet Lizzie said that she was in the house. Mm-hmm. She was in the living room. She was upstairs. She was in the house.
Yes.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Maybe they're just... what do you call it when you forget things? I
forgot. They have Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's, yeah.
I don't know. On June 20th, so trial started June 20th, 15 days later, the jury deliberated for an hour and a half and acquitted Borden, Lizzie Borden, of the murders. So So she wasn't found guilty. They couldn't find any sustaining evidence to prove that she was guilty because everyone was all over the place. I think that's one of the reasons why. Everyone was all over the place. There was no investigation. There were so many different accounts.
So they were all like, you know what?
We can't blame her because we don't have anything to blame her with.
Yeah. You know what? This is just all a mess. Why don't we just forget about this?
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Let's just move on, guys.
Yeah.
You know? You know, two people died. Oh, well.
Yeah, let's go buy two cows.
Let's go buy two cows for my niece. But yeah, when she walked out of the courthouse, reporters said that she was the happiest woman in the world. That's what she said. She's like, I am the happiest woman in the world.
Crazy bitch.
I just lost my parents.
But I'm happy.
But I'm the happiest woman in the world.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm happy. Why?
I'm so happy.
My parents were murdered, but I am a happy person.
But I have so much joy right now. I have so much joy and peace.
Yeah, I mean, my dress is burnt.
Yeah.
But I'm okay.
I'm okay. Yeah. So, that's like the main story. But I have theories, and I'm going to go over a few people who are part of my theory.
Ooh, okay.
So I'm going after you, Maggie Sullivan and John Morse.
Okay.
Because I think they are two big people that are part of this scene, this crime scene, this case.
Okay, Maggie Sullivan, she was...
The maid.
Okay, she was the maid. She was the one cleaning the windows,
yes.
Inside and out.
Uh-huh. I didn't see anything. And then John Morris, this is Lizzie Borden's mom's brother.
Okay.
Like her biological mother who passed away.
So her uncle.
Yeah, it's her uncle, but I just want to make that really clear that it's not Andrew's brother.
Okay.
It's her mother's.
From her mother's
yeah.
side. Okay.
So I read the testimony of Maggie and John Morris.
Mm-hmm.
And damn.
Oh, really?
They have very... John Morris... So I'm going to go over John Morris because it's shorter. He was very calm. He was very collected.
Mm-hmm.
He was very like straight with his answers. He gave one account. He never changed his story. And he was cooperating with the police. And he was being told... He answered everything he was being asked.
Okay.
He was just like, yeah, this happened. The Bordens were normal. I went out. I came back and the police was there.
So he's the one that went to buy the cows, right?
Yeah, he went to pair of oxen for his niece.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was out the whole time. He said, I was going to come back for lunch. I came back around 12, and that's when police was there. Mm-hmm. People were outside talking and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get to Maggie Sullivan's testimony.
The maid.
Yeah. And she claims... So you know how I said that everyone is having breakfast together?
Yes.
In the house,
mm-hmm.
She claims that only Andrew, Abby, and John ate breakfast together.
Andrew, Abby, and John?
Yeah, so Andrew, Abby, and the uncle.
Okay.
Only they were having breakfast together. Mm-hmm. After they finished their breakfast, Lizzie came downstairs to eat her breakfast. But she didn't eat what they were eating.
Okay.
She ate, so they ate mutton, and that's what the thing that was like.
The lamb, right?
Yeah, the lamb. Okay. They ate that, and she only came down to have some coffee. And some cookies or some biscuits or whatever.
Yes.
So she didn't want to eat what they were eating.
Yeah, getting ready for the murder.
Mm-hmm. She was getting ready.
She's
maybe she wasn't that hungry because she didn't want to kill on
an empty stomach.
You don't want to kill on an empty stomach.
Upset stomach.
Yes, but you also don't want to kill like while you're super full because what if you get a tummy ache?
Exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So she says that Lizzie didn't eat with everyone else. She ate afterwards. Weird. All right.
Yes.
She claimed that not seen anyone leave the house, that Lizzie was in the house with her when Andrew arrived, and that she heard laughing at the top of the stairs, which this was, she heard Lizzie laughing at the top of the stairs.
Mm-hmm. Crazy
bitch. That was her testimony. She avoids answering questions and does not give any real straight answers. So I was reading it, and she's like, do you remember if you locked the door? Because remember one of the claims was that someone came in and killed Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I did lock the door. Oh, you did lock the door. Wait, no, I don't remember if I locked the door. Did you or did you not lock the door? I'm not sure. You're not sure if you locked the door. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. This is Maggie, right?
This is Maggie.
Okay.
So they're asking her, did you lock the door? She's like, yes.
Well, I mean, when you experience like a traumatic experience. You probably have your what you remember, not like a little blurry. Well, don't you think? Like maybe,
I guess,
because like,
yeah.
You lived something very traumatic and it's very like strong. So, I mean, maybe she did forget. Maybe
she's covering up for Lizzie.
Maybe she's covering for Lizzie.
Yeah, because she never blamed her for the murders. She never claimed to think that Lizzie had murdered her parents. She never testified against her. She never said anything incriminating.
Everything.
Yeah. You know what she did after these murders?
What?
She moved to Montana in a weird remote place in the mountains.
Where no one could find her.
Where no one could relate her to the murders.
Yeah.
And she lived there for the rest of her life in a house. All alone.
Yeah. All by herself.
I think she lived with her husband. I'm not really sure, but she just she moved away from Massachusetts.
Like, see ya.
Yeah. And she just lived out her rest of her days there. She never had children.
She died by herself.
Mm-hmm. That's what she did after the murders. So if you're trying to keep quiet about something, are you going to stay in the town and let everyone talk about what you're doing? Or are you going to move very far away into a remote place in the mountains?
Where
no one can find you.
Yeah, a little suspicious.
Yeah. People didn't know where she was until there were pictures found of her after she died.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So there's a long time where people don't know where she was, and then they found her. That sounds like someone who doesn't want to be found.
Yes.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Another part of this story is Emma Borden. I hadn't mentioned her before because I wanted to mention her at the end.
Okay.
Because it's part of my theory.
Okay.
Emma Borden was Lizzie's sister. And the day of the murders, Emma was in Fairhaven, which is about 15 miles away from Fall River. And she was visiting a friend. And during the trial, it was revealed that Emma was in love with a man that was below her status.
Okay.
But so her father would not approve of this.
So they were rich, right?
Yes, they were
swimming. Very rich.
Swimming in money.
Okay.
And she was in love with a man that was not rich.
Okay.
And her father would never approve of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so people think like, maybe she was part of it. I don't think she was. I don't think she was part of it.
No, because she was, I mean, she wasn't there, right?
She wasn't there.
Okay.
No. Yeah. But in 1984, a book titled Lizzie, authored by crime writer Frank Spearing, said that maybe she secretly traveled back to town and killed her parents. I think that 15 miles seems like extensive to do such a thing. I don't know. Maybe if you're really determined, but my prime suspect is Lizzie.
I mean, when you're in love, you do crazy things.
That is true.
But no, I think the crazy one here is Lizzie.
Yes. So she was, I don't think she secretly went back to Fall River to kill her parents.
No.
But since Lizzie was accused of the murder, Emma was the sole inheritor of the money for the time.
Mm-hmm.
So while in trial, you can't inherit money.
Right.
So Emma was the only one with the money. And it says that she was supportive of Lizzie throughout the trial and spent a fortune trying to prove Lizzie's innocence.
Emma. Okay.
Yes. So she never believed that her sister did this.
Hmm.
Exactly. I don't know. Maybe she knew and she just didn't want to say anything.
Maybe she was another accomplice.
Maybe it was part of the plan. I don't know.
Yeah, Lizzie, Emma, and the maid, they seem like best friends.
Yeah.
They would cover their tracks.
Yes. And then, so afterwards, Emma moved away from Fall River due to their unpopularity, and she never saw Lizzie again. I don't know. So this is Emma. I think that's all of the facts that I have about this case.
Okay.
They're a lot. They're confusing. I'm sorry.
Very.
I'm very confused too. So I have a theory. I have my own theory of what exactly happened. So this is my theory. Lizzie Borden hated Abby. She despised her. She wanted her dead.
Clearly, yeah.
Yeah. She thought she's taking my father's money. And she wanted to ensure that that Abby would not take everything away from her. She wanted to ensure, hey, I need to get rid of this woman so that my father's money gets given to me
right.
and my sister and not that woman that came out of nowhere and stole our money. So she planned the murders to ensure that she kept the money and not Abby. She promised John Morse and Maggie Sullivan money if they helped her get away with it.
Ooh, I like that.
So she's like, hey,
yeah,
I'm going to do this. I'm going to give you, I'm going to pay you.
I'm going to pay
you. You just have to cooperate with the police. You just have to tell them that I'm innocent. And nothing bad will happen to you.
Hmm. I like, yeah, that's, mm-hmm. I like that one.
Yeah. So, yeah, so the day of the murders, John Morse spent all day out doing business, whatever. He left.
Buying cows?
Yeah, buying cows. And Lizzie murdered Abby and Andrew. And Maggie was doing window cleaning, doing chores as usual. So if people walked by the house, they're like, oh yeah, that's usual for the boarding house.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Maggie's there cleaning. We see her cleaning all the time. Nothing weird is happening inside of the house.
Maybe she was keeping a lookout. Maybe she was,
yep.
She was like, okay, yeah, you do this, I'll be
cleaning the windows. Making sure no one comes to visit. And if they do, it'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. No one's home. Someone's sick. We've been sick.
Yeah, we've been sick because we ate raw lamb.
Yeah.
So they're feeling under the weather. Can you just come back later?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think she was the one just
keeping an eye out.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Maggie and John both covered for Lizzie during the trial. And this was 1892, 1893. Women were seen as those, like, fragile, sophisticated creatures. They couldn't possibly pick up an axe and murder both their parents, right?
Yeah.
The police didn't think they could do this.
No, yeah, back then women
back would then, be like... And then police back then were just men.
Yeah.
Men thinking women are fragile.
Yeah.
They can't murder someone.
She couldn't have done this. No.
And this is a rich person with class and status and... An image to upkeep for society. She couldn't have possibly killed her parents.
No.
Someone broke in.
Someone
wanted the money.
Someone had it broken in.
Yeah. And so I'm assuming either the police were paid off, they believed that Lizzie didn't do it, or...
because they were a powerful family.
Mm-hmm. Or the police was just absolutely stupid.
And that too. But I think they offered the police money because
probably, yeah.
They were a very powerful family. Yes. They were rich. They had everything. And how do you buy someone?
Yeah, exactly. And you know what Lizzie did?
What?
She moved a few houses down in the same street and lived there the rest of her life. She never had kids. I don't think she ever married.
Hmm.
And she just lived in the same neighborhood for the rest of her life as if she didn't murder her parents. A few houses down.
Man, how can you live with that?
Exactly. I think, this is my theory, it's not facts, I'm not saying these are facts, Lizzie murdered her parents in cold blood. She never felt regret because she was just one of those people that murders and doesn't feel anything.
Crazy.
She paid off everyone she could.
She bought, yeah.
And she lived out the rest of her life enjoying the inheritance. And because Abby died first... Andrew was in her testament, in her will.
Mm-hmm.
So Abby died. Everything went to Andrew. Andrew died. And so everything went to the sisters.
To Lizzie, Emma?
Yeah. So it was probably a plan. Like, if I kill Abby first, everything goes to my dad. And because everything is now my dad's, everything will be mine when he's dead.
I mean...
Can you be more clear? You be more suspicious?
Oh man, it's just wow. I don't know what to say, because there was a lot of evidence.
Yeah,
it was very suspicious.
Yes.
That Lizzie always changed
her story.
She would contradict herself. I mean, come on, what else do you want?
Yeah,
the police, man.
Yeah.
They were like, she burned her dress. Oh, it was full of something.
Anyway.
Yeah,
so that was the Lizzie Borden house. It's claimed, some people think that it's haunted now. It's a bed and breakfast. So you can go and stay at the house.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That would be cool. That was a very confusing case story.
Yeah, exactly, because it is. And yeah.
Wow, well, that was good. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
If you guys like these kinds of stories, let us know. Like, share, rate us, and leave a review wherever you're listening to us right now, and support the show.
Yes.
You know, if you guys want to share your scary story, contact us at thedisconnectedpod@gmail.com, and you might hear your name on future episodes.
Ooh, so yeah, so you have a paranormal or murderer or something crazy like that.
Or something happened to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Something disturbing. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and Radio Public as
The Disconnected Podcast.
Thank you. And tune in for next week, because we'll be diving into the true story of Behind the Conjuring.
Ooh. Yeah. Very exciting.
Very exciting.
I'm excited to hear your story.
Yeah. So tune in for next week, because we have the Warren archives.
Yeah, we have them in our possession.
Yes, we stole them.
We broke into their home and stole all of their archives.
Yeah, and Annabelle.
You stole her too?
I stole her too.
OMG.
Yeah, so thank you for listening. You guys have a very nice day, evening, morning. And I was your host, Angel.
And I'm also your host, Jessica.
And thanks for listening.
And thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.